What is that name on the cup? Who's Maria?
The one that I turned around. Okay, it's from The Lost and Found. So I'm Maria, if anyone asks.
What Lost and Found?
Just A Lost and Found. Don't worry about it.
Back up. Back up. A random Lost and Found. You need to elaborate because...
Not so random, but I don't want to tell you where. Anyway, it's a Yeti. This is like a $50 cup. So you can get.
And poor Maria's looking for it.
Well, she's obviously not looking that hard because she would have found it, but I found it. So suck it, Maria. Suck on that.
Jesus Christ. 2 days, and you're listening to Murder Unscripted. What is up, crime crew? Welcome back to another episode of Murder Unscripted, the most immersive true crime podcast on the internet today. I'm your host, Ed Hydock, along with my co-host, the podcast prosecutor, Melissa Spivey.
Ooh, I like that. Come up with some good ones.
It's not bad, right? No, Melissa, so I need to ask you something. So do you love true crime?
Yes. I would have to go with yes on that.
How about intriguing stories?
Also, yes.
Do you enjoy playing detective from your couch?
I enjoy doing anything but from my couch, so yes. Yeah,
that's a dumb question. Yeah, you had me at couch, yeah.
That's all I needed to hear, and I'm in.
Well, I have the story for you today, seriously.
But honestly, before we get to it, I do feel like I was just watching an infomercial. Do you like blah, blah, blah? But wait, there's more.
Call now, just pay shipping and handling.
Oh my God. Can we try to get an infomercial host as a guest? One theme. I don't know what the theme
would
be.
What
would
they talk about? Yeah, what would they?
They talk about whatever they wanted, and clearly they're good at it.
You know what? That Slapchop guy.
Vince?
He did some bad things to some women.
Yeah, he just looks grotesque. He looks like a little rodent.
He's slimy, but that Slapchop's pretty awesome. No joke.
Is it? I don't know. I wouldn't know.
Well, we are in week 3 of our spring cleaning block, and we've been diving into some criminal cases, crazy mysteries, all suggested by our listeners. And this week, we're going to be exploring the case of Christy Giles and Hilda Marcella Cabrales Arzola. I know that's a mouthful. So this was submitted by the girls over at Vintage Homicide. It's a podcast, and Ruby Wild and Mayday are a couple of forensic scientists, and they do a nice job over there. Mm-hmm. So thank you, ladies, so much for your contribution. This was a cool case. And you should check those guys out. They cover old, kind of older homicides mixed with like some antique-y, they're into fashion, but it's all from a scientist perspective. So check them out. They're pretty awesome. So let's dive into this case today, and put together by our wonderful research producer, Candace C.J. Johnson. And we'll extend the usual blanket trigger warning for all the bad things that go along with murder and the words that I try not to, I want to use the real words and I can't.
Nope.
But I'm not going to use the fake words either. I refuse. So
no, not doing that.
Well, here's a little tease about today. So what began as a typical night out in the LA party scene turned tragic by morning, with Christy Giles being found dead and Hilda fighting for her life. They were dropped off at different hospitals by masked men in car without plates. And it led to one of the most chilling kind of high profile mysteries the city has ever seen. What really happened to these two ambitious young women? A dark and twisted story is about to unfold, and it reveals the depths of LA's hidden horrors.
Sounds more like horror would, if you ask me.
Womp womp. Well, that's definitely an accurate play on words for this one. I mean, it's just, it's such a sad, it's kind of a more of a cautionary tale. Like, this one wasn't as much of a whodunit. Like, you kind of find out pretty quickly who did it, but it's just eye-opening and disgusting. So... I don't know. We can hop in the time machine for this one, but we don't have to go far. We're only going back to 2021.
Oh, well, that only gets like one beep boop.
No, yeah.
It doesn't have to go back too far.
We're there.
Well, in 2021, the world was still navigating the aftermath of COVID-19, which I feel like we're still doing. And this unprecedented time, remember that, everybody? I hated hearing that.
It was a week, and then it was 2 weeks, and then it was like a month, and now it's 4 years later, however many years, 5 years.
And every commercial from McDonald's to like Toyota was like, in this unprecedented time.
Yeah.
Synonym.com, guys. We need something else. I'm so sick of hearing that. But nonetheless, the time was filled with a lot of uncertainty, a little bit of hope, and just like constant change. There were vaccines rolling out, but there were new variants emerging, and everyday life was like, we were all trying to get back to some semblance of like normal, but a new normal. So some countries began to open back up while others were like, went back into lockdown. And Ed, I'm sure, because I know you, I can already picture you curled up on the sofa watching Squid Games on Netflix.
Squid Games is awesome.
Actually, let's just tell everyone the truth. You're probably deep into Taylor Swift's re-release of Fearless, because we all know you're an avid Swiftie.
You know me. Glued to my set watching this. What is it, Fearless?
I don't know. Well, beyond the pop culture moments, 2021 was also a year of intense political and environmental upheaval. The storming of the U.S. Capitol happened. There were devastating wildfires in California. And there were actually some catastrophic floods in Germany and China. And these events really sparked like global conversations about safety, justice, systematic equality.
Yeah, that was definitely a weird year. And it's funny you bring up the storming of the Capitol, because I will always tie that to, yes, I mean, that was obviously going on. But as that was happening, my bunny died. Anthony Hopkins.
Hopkins. Get it. Because he hops.
Because he hops. Yeah. But he was the cutest.
It's so sad. I can't even talk about losing a pet. It's my kryptonite.
Well, amid all of those kind of more important headlines that you mentioned, some of the more heartbreaking moments came from deeply personal tragedies that pointed to a much larger societal issue. And one such case was the devastating loss of Hilda Marcela Cabrales Arzola and Christy Giles. These were two vibrant young women in Los Angeles whose night out ended in tragedy. And their deaths under deeply suspicious circumstances shed light on the dangers that women still face and raised urgent questions about drugging, consent, and the justice system's kind of ongoing failure to protect the people that are the most vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get into who these ladies were. So 24-year-old Christy Giles and 26-year-old Hilda Marcellus Cabrales Arzola were two young, driven women with bright futures ahead of them. Christy was a ray of sunshine. She just instantly captivated everybody around her the moment she walked into a room. And her this infectious energy and just undeniable beauty drew people in like moths to a flame. And it made it impossible not to like her instantly.
Aww.
Her older sister, Misty Weldon, described her life as, quote, one grand adventure, noting that she was never afraid to try new things. Christy was fearless. I mean, this girl rode camels in Morocco. She went scuba diving and she even went skydiving.
Wow. All of that by 24. Holy shit.
Right.
I'm way behind.
She went for it. She was living. Yeah. You better. I want to see you on a camel.
Oof. I don't know about all that.
Well, when Christy wasn't off on some kind of crazy adventure, she was traveling the world as a high fashion model for Wilhelmina. And that's one of the world's leading model and talent agencies with locations. They have New York, LA, Miami, London. And fun fact, our very own Candace, the research producer who helped put this together, is a part-time model and is also affiliated with Wilhelmina.
Because she's fabulous AF.
She absolutely is. Yeah. And for those who haven't checked out Candace's, she's a fashion designer as well. So she has some really cool stuff going on. We can link her page at the bottom.
But research producer for Murder Unscripted is on top of her resume, clearly.
Yes, exactly. Duh.
Duh.
Well, after excelling as a track star in high school, Christy shifted gears to modeling. And at just 15, she eventually made it to L.A. And that's where she called home.
Wow.
At 21, she met her soulmate, Jans Celliers. And he is a photographer and sound effects editor from South Africa who was 17 years older than her. But they were introduced by mutual friends at an art gallery and then quickly decided to elope at Burning Man, which says a lot about them. Those I know so many people that in the TV industry that go to Burning Man too. It's a wild time. And that was in August of 2019, because the thought was, why wait? We're in love. We're crazy about each other. Let's just do this. And then we'll plan a formal wedding in Alabama later on. Kind of, and that's where all of Christie's family lived. So that's, they were going to just go get married and then come back later and celebrate.
Is that a thing? Like, I wonder how many people get married at Burning Man.
That's a good question. I'll bet you more than you think.
Yikes.
Yeah. Well, for those who aren't familiar with Burning Man, so it's a temporary annual cultural event held in the Nevada desert, and it focuses on community, art, self-expression, and self-reliance, basically. And it involves thousands of people who just gathering together to create their own metropolis where they exchange ideas and art and the burning of man, which symbolizes the release of kind of past burdens.
My God, I would be having a nervous breakdown.
You wouldn't last 5 minutes there.
No.
No. There's no Target or Starbucks.
Oh, God. And there's other people, which is already
oh, and all the people. Yeah.
There's oof. No, thank you.
So while exploring her new passion for interior design, Christie met Hilda Marcella. And she was an architect from Mexico who had just relocated to L.A. And wow. Hilda was a devoted daughter. She checked in with her dad every single day. And she graduated summa cum laude from University of Monterey in New Mexico, and she excelled in everything she pursued. And like Christie, Hilda was a world traveler, having visited 22 countries. In
whoa.
Like, it's insane. I've left the country three times, and it's been to like Mexico and Canada, so I don't even know if that counts.
These girls were living the dream. Good for them. Good for them. Seriously.
Absolutely. And the point being, Hilda, she was incredibly smart, but she wasn't just a bookworm. So she loved to have fun and dance and hang out with friends. She was worldly as well. So it was easy to see why these two women kind of formed this instant bond. And they shared a lot of similarities and had plenty in common. Like Hilda, you'll like this part. Hilda absolutely adored her dog, Thomas. She had left with friends planning to bring him to L.A. once she kind of got settled. And unfortunately, that moment never came.
Okay. It always makes me the saddest. Like when our victim has a pupper at home waiting for them. And like the poor pup doesn't understand that like their human passed away. And it's like they just never come back. And the thought of some poor pupper sitting there waiting for their mom or dad. Stop it.
Well, just 4 months after moving to L.A., her life was tragically cut short. Hilda and Christie were both found abandoned on the curb at different hospitals, with Hilda fighting for her life in the ICU, which is a parent's worst nightmare. I cannot even imagine. Both women had experienced a drug overdose, and Hilda's toxicology report revealed the presence of cocaine, ecstasy, and a high level of fentanyl. And as soon as Hilda's family received this news, they sensed something was off. Because Hilda was always very health conscious, and Christie's husband insisted she would never intentionally harm herself. On the flip side, Christie's autopsy revealed cocaine, fentanyl, and GHB, commonly known as a date rape drug, in her system. So I'm about to tell you a pretty wild story, but just based on what I've kind of teased to you, what do you think happened that night, Melissa?
Well, clearly the women were drugged, and it sounds like it was like that cocktail of drugs you would not take intentionally. Like, these women are not dumb. I can't imagine them willingly ingesting fentanyl or GHB. So clearly they were given that or duped into taking that or something. Like, those aren't fun party drugs. Oof.
We'll get into the kind of moral of the story later, but I think the moral is don't take anything from anyone, especially when you're out like just with your girlfriends.
Yeah, you don't know what it's laced with or where it's been. Yeah.
So many evil intentions out there. Well, take a step back and see how we got here. On the morning of November 21st, 2021, Christie began her day doing what she loved most, and that was watching the sunrise on the beach alongside her cat, Loki. And
aww.
Loki was a Russian blue whose favorite thing to do was literally run out on the beach and roll around in the sand.
I love it. He was an honorary pupper.
He was. So her husband, Jan, was visiting his father in San Francisco at the time. So they were apart. So Christie grabs her phone and sends Jan a very sweet video of the peaceful scene that was going on that she was experiencing that morning. And she wrote, "I wish you were here," to which Jan replied, "I will forever wish I was there too."
Oh, that's haunting.
So later that evening, Christy meets up with her friends, Hilda and another woman who is kind of remaining anonymous in the story. So we're just going to call her the anonymous friend. Okay. And they were heading out for a girls' night out in Hollywood. And the evening began at an art exhibit at Soho House in West Hollywood. And from there, the plan was to head east to a warehouse party in Los Angeles to see one of their favorite DJs. But by the next morning, November 13th, Jan noticed a missed call from Christy, and one that he hadn't heard while he was sleeping. So he woke up and saw missed call. He's like, okay, you know what? So he either had his phone on silent or vibrate at night, which I totally do. He figured Christy had just stayed out late and was sleeping in. So he replied to her with a text. He didn't want to wake her up. But then he got no response. And this was completely out of character for Christy. So he checked Christy's location because they use their iPhone's share my location feature. Mm-hmm. And it was basically every time they were apart just to make sure each other were safe. And he finds that Christy's phone pinged at an unfamiliar address. It was 8641 West Olympic Boulevard. It wasn't attached to any like business or club or anything like that. It was just a random address. So he's still unable to reach her. So Jan refreshes her location again. And this time her phone had moved and it showed that it pinged at Southern California Hospital in Culver City. So obviously things are getting a little more critical for Jan, and because he calls the hospital and he finds out that Christy was actually admitted to the ER.
Holy shit. Like, how haunting would that have to be, though? Like, imagine you are out traveling. You ping Brenda's phone, which you can't do because you don't have an iPhone. But moving on. And it pings at a hospital. Like, you're a billion miles away. Like, that has to be terrifying to see that your spouse is at a hospital, but you don't know why.
Yeah.
And I'm honestly surprised that they released that information to Jan over the phone. I thought that was like a HIPAA thing.
Oh, where you couldn't say someone's in the ER?
I didn't think you were allowed to say anything about them being there or not.
Even if it's your spouse?
Yeah, but I could call and be like, yep, that's my spouse. Huh. You know what I mean? Like, how do they prove that over the phone?
I don't know. I never thought of that, but they did. Too bad.
I think about those things.
Yeah. Well, Jan is obviously in a full-blown panic at this point, and he hops the next flight from San Fran to Los Angeles, and he's just completely desperate for answers. So he contacts Christy's parents on his way to let them know something is terribly wrong. And shortly after then, Christy's mother, Dusty Giles, she calls the hospital, and the news she receives is devastating. So a staff member tells her, "I'm sorry to inform you, but your daughter has passed away."
Oh my God, that is horrible. Like, as a parent, there can't be anything more devastating to hear that.
But, yeah, I don't even like to think about it.
But, all right, wait, where is Hilda? Is she at that hospital?
Well, I'm glad you asked. No, so that's actually a mystery in itself. So remember that anonymous friend that the girls were out with?
Yeah.
So Jan actually knew her as well, and he immediately reaches out, and she says, yeah, everything was fine. She left before Christy and Hilda, you know, and everything was good. There was nothing to worry about. So Jan is like, well, everything is not okay, because he fills her in on what happened. And it turns out, so according to CBS News, the anonymous friend shared her location with Hilda at one point during the evening. So she and Jan kind of compare notes, and it turns out her location pinged at the exact same address as Christy's phone earlier that day, which is that 8641 West Olympic Boulevard.
I'm not feeling good about that address.
Yeah, seriously. So next, Jan tries reaching out to Hilda, knowing that she and Christy had also been together, and he gets no response. So he calls Hilda's mother, and I'm going to butcher this name. I know it. So Hilda's mother is Dr. Hilda Morella Arzola Placienza. And so now we have two Hildas. So I'm going to call her Mom Hilda. So Mom Hilda tells him she received a call in the middle of the night from Kaiser Permanente Hospital in Los Angeles. And they told her that her daughter Hilda had been admitted and was very ill. So Mom Hilda and her husband immediately rushed to Los Angeles to be by Hilda's side. And by the time they arrived, Hilda was in the ICU and her organs were completely failing.
Aww.
11 days later, on November 24th, 2021, just a day before her 27th birthday, Hilda was taken off life support and she passed away.
Obviously, that's hard for any family to make that decision, but like, her mom was a doctor. Like, that had to have been so hard to know on an intellectual level that her daughter's not going to get better But then there's like the level of being a mom and wanting, not believing that. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Just unfolded so quickly. And that's, I don't even know how you process those feelings. You don't even have time to cope with the fact that they're missing, let alone
it's
wild. But Jan was obviously convinced that whatever happened at 8641 West Olympic Boulevard was behind both Christy and Hilda's deaths. And he was determined to uncover the truth. And cue the crow.
Dun, dun, dun.
Absolutely. So desperate for answers, he posted the address across social media platforms. So he basically says, my wife was last seen here, if anyone has any information. And the responses were chilling. Multiple people contacted him and said that location on West Olympic Boulevard was, it had been tied, it had quite a reputation. It had been tied to like rumors and reports of just disturbing activity. So according to a 2023 news article on WGHN.com, Jan said, quote, people got back to me with saying this guy lives at this address and he's a very like suspicious person, but there's a lot of things out on the internet about him and he's not a very savory character. A lot of terrible things have been written about him online, end quote.
Jeez.
Yeah. So pretty soon the internet sleuths take over and produce this guy's name, David Pierce. And he was a Hollywood producer who lived at 8641 West Olympic Boulevard with a buddy of his, an actor, Brant Osborne.
Is it bad that I'm already questioning, are you really a producer? Like, I feel like everyone in Hollywood is like, I'm a producer. I'm a writer.
You have every right to question that, and you'll find out why later.
Hmm.
So Jan isn't done playing detective. He logs into Christy's laptop and checks out her text messages, which I guess you can sync them between Mac and iPhone. You know, I'm an Android guy, but I think you can have your texts pop up on your Mac too.
Yeah. So,
but thank God for this, because that's how he was able to kind of track these Christy and Hilda's last movements. So he goes on there and he notices a text exchange between Christy and Hilda at 5:30 a.m. when Christy texted, "Let's go," with that little emoji that's like big eyes and kind of a flat smile, like, let's go.
Like, nervous. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Hilda texts back immediately and says, I'll call an Uber. I'm 10 minutes away. Or 10 minutes away. So I guess the Uber was 10 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
But a check with Uber then reveals that the driver had arrived and Christy and Hilda were no-shows. So the Uber left, obviously. And there was also a text message from Christy's friend Eddie at 5:36 a.m. And Christy and Hilda were supposed to meet him at some after hours spot, but there was no reply. So the $1 million question is, what happened in that 6 minute gap between 5:30 a.m. and 5:36 a.m.?
Jesus, it's wild how like so many lives can be changed in such a short amount of 6 minutes. And like
absolutely,
this whole ripple effect just it's wild.
And it's crazy because you could tell by the tone of that. We talked about reading text versus hearing things said, but like, let's go could mean anything. It could be like, let's go. Like, I'm just want to get out of here. But that little emoji that like fear.
Yes.
I think that means fear. So clearly something was up before 5:30 when they called the Uber to get out of there. But it looks to me like they never made it.
God, 6 minutes. I'm like, the Uber was there. They were so close.
They were.
I hate that.
Well, by now, police are involved, and the digital footprint Christy left behind, her messages, her location data, her final moments would become key evidence that would help investigators begin to unravel the mystery of what really happened that night. So detectives start, they go to the hospital in Culver City, where Jan, just completely desperate for answers, shared everything that he had uncovered through his own investigation. And this guy literally scoured every square inch of his wife's personal life, including phone records, text, social media, and he pretty much hit a wall. So now, obviously, police hope to kind of pick up where Jan left off, and they get some interesting information from the hospital staff. So they tell Jan that Christy and Hilda had been dropped off by three unidentified men wearing masks, driving a black Prius with no license plates, literally just abandoned, like their lives don't matter. And just let that sink in for a little bit. Like, these two women were out for a fun night on the town, something that most women do for a girl's night. Like, they weren't doing anything crazy. And drinks, dancing, you know, letting their hair hang down, and ended up in the company of some predators, it seems like to me, who assaulted and drugged them and left them for dead. And instead of calling 911, they decided to discard them like trash. And I don't know if taking them to the hospital was like maybe we want to try to save their lives, but it's very weird because whatever happened to them wasn't good, and the chance of them living, they had to know that it was slim to none.
Well, and at this point, I think it's clear this was not an overdose gone wrong. This was, like, premeditated and calculated. The fact that these dudes were wearing masks means that they were trying to conceal their identities. This is what people do when they're guilty. And for Christy to even text, "Let's go," with that, like, scared emoji, she must have done that before she passed out from all that shit that they gave her.
Right.
And, like, that was, like, her spidey senses being like, something is so wrong here. Like, we need to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trust your gut, people, always.
Clearly, she felt unsafe. So, and Christy and Hilda's family even noted that they were cautious. They weren't reckless women. So they were clearly the victims of manipulation and violence. And I can't even imagine what it would be like to be a woman going out on the town. Like, I know what I see when I go out, and it's gross. I mean, the way guys act nowadays, not all guys, but, like, you can't even, how do you enjoy yourself with all these just fucking predators lurking around as a woman?
It's hard. And I feel like if you're going to go out, like, say I go out to celebrate my birthday and, like, I want to get wild, like, you always need to make sure you almost have, like, a friend there to be, like, your mom, to, like, who's right, kind of stays sober and, like, make sure to, like,
just keep an eye out.
Drink. Yeah, yeah. And keep an eye out and all that stuff. It's like you always have to almost have, like, a babysitter.
But how sad is that? Just to go out right, and have fun.
It's wild.
It's the world we live in. Well, on November 14th, 2021, a homicide detective was officially assigned to Christy's case. And meanwhile, her husband, Jan, pressed forward with this independent investigation he was conducting. And he would regularly update his followers on Instagram. So this was kind of one that unfolded similar to some of the other cases we've done, like, happened in real time, where these information was coming out, but people online were helping too. And it clearly was a huge catalyst to catching this guy. So that's great.
We love to see that.
We definitely do. So through his efforts, Jan contacted the owner of this warehouse where Christy and Hilda had been earlier that night. And the owner connected him with a photographer who had documented the event. And in the images, Christy and Hilda are seen together in the VIP section, but also in the company of this David Pierce guy that we talked about earlier. There's actually pictures of them together.
Don't like that.
I know. So Jan also secured surveillance video showing Christy and Hilda leaving the venue with Pierce and two other men. And at 4:51 a.m. on Saturday, November 13th, Pierce and his friends were seen leaving the warehouse with Christy and Hilda. And surveillance images captured them getting into a car that would later be linked to the same location where the woman's phones had been pinging all day. So let's talk again. We're going to bring up these toxicology reports again, because it's honestly just heartbreaking. And remember, Christy had a deadly mix in her system: fentanyl, cocaine, ketamine, and GHB, which is the date rape drug.
Yeah, and that shit's nearly impossible to detect. It acts so fast, and it is horrifically, scarily, terrifyingly good at, like, knocking someone out.
It's awful to think about. It really is. And Hilda's toxicology showed that she had cocaine, ecstasy, and a few other drugs that they couldn't even identify, which is wild that both of them were always super careful with their drinks when they went out. So how did this happen? Like, something doesn't add up.
And look at the way they were found, like, dropped off at separate hospitals is weird. But just, yeah, to be thrown out of a car like they were nothing. No explanation, no attempt to help, just dumped. And the car didn't even have license plates, and the guys are wearing masks. I mean, how is that not super suspicious?
I don't know. I feel like these guys maybe that was their way of helping. Like, but let's cover our identities because we don't want to be tied to this. But maybe one, I don't know.
I don't think they have any part of them is, like, a compassionate, kind human. They were cover their asses.
Yeah. Well, and let's also not forget about this Hollywood producer, David Pierce, who is detective's main suspect at this point. And a background check reveals this monster has a long, disturbing history. And we're talking about multiple accusations dating back to 2007, all the way through 2020, drugging women and assaulting them when they were unconscious. And somehow he's still out there living his life. Like, how does that happen for real?
Because the system is a joke. I sound like a broken record, but, like, the system definitely failed these women, and I feel like had he been put away for the other crimes, Christy and Hilda would still be here. But yet again, the American justice system has failed.
Well, buckle up, because you're about to learn that David Pierce may not be a Hollywood producer after all, but clearly he's a hell of an actor. We'll just say that. So let's talk about where this guy lived. So for someone claiming to be a Hollywood producer, his apartment looked like a total disaster zone. We're talking filthy, cluttered, straight up hoarder vibes, to be honest. And like one of those houses where I wouldn't be shocked if they pulled like 15 flat cats out of the freezer.
Oh, yeah.
People even reported weird noises coming from this place in the day, the day that everything went down. But nobody called the cops. Why? Like, were they scared of this guy? Were they worried about getting involved? Like, Melissa, to be honest, if you hear creepy sounds coming from a neighbor's place, what would you do? Would you at least call the cops?
Because I'm like a true crime junkie, I'd like to think that I would, but I also know that my brain would try to justify the noises. Like, oh, maybe it's the TV or maybe mm-hmm. it's this, that. I think everyone does that.
Yeah, because you don't want to like think the worst. You don't suspect right. the worst.
And there's also the bystander effect where you're like, oh, someone else is going to call because if I'm this concerned about it, somebody else has to be, you know. But
yeah.
But like right now, my neighbor's an elderly woman. So like if I heard something weird, I would definitely call because I know her. So
Exactly. And I think that plays into it, too. So maybe these neighbors didn't know each other and they were like, whatever, not my business.
Right.
Like, not my problem.
Oh.
So who was this David Pierce guy? He was the 37-year-old was a familiar name in the Los Angeles kind of nightlife circle. And he described himself as a producer and had a past as an actor residing in West L.A. And he had an apartment close to Beverly Hills. However, it was his reputation that made more noise than his IMDb credits, because rumors of aggressive, violent behavior and strange vibes at gatherings and just all these cautionary tales from women. I mean, it was no mystery or no secret that this guy was kind of a scumbag. And thanks to the internet, police quickly identified him as a significant person of interest. And there was visual proof that Christy and Hilda had reportedly crossed paths with this guy earlier that night at a warehouse party. And now you have text messages retrieved from their phones, which confirmed that they had left the event with Pierce and two other men. So now all of a sudden, the bullseye is focusing pretty heavily on David Pierce and whoever these other guys were.
Mm-hmm.
So on December 14th, armed with this information from Christy's husband, Jan, Detective Jonathan Vanderlee and his partner arrive at 8641 Olympic Boulevard just after midnight. And there was a light on, so Vanderlee approached the apartment and knocked on the door. And as soon as he identified himself as LAPD, the lights go out. So
that's not shady.
All right. Well, after about 15 minutes, Pierce finally opens the door and Vanderlee begins questioning him about this black Prius. But Vanderlee got the sense that Pierce wasn't really being honest about it. So next, Vanderlee speaks with Brand Osborne, who remember was the actor that had previously been living with Pierce. And Osborne claims that he had never seen the women. His story changed multiple times, and he was just increasingly nervous as the interview went on. And eventually, he admits that Christy and Hilda had indeed been to his address. And Vanderlee asks him if he can take a look around, and Osborne says, sure. Big mistake.
Oh, yeah.
So as Vanderlee looks through the home, he notices the beds had been completely stripped and a washing machine that had clearly been used. It was still damp, like still dripping wet. So they had just cleaned up evidence of something. And he found a safe containing baggies, which is also kind of a clear indication of narcotics whenever you find baggies in a safe. You
know? Yeah.
So at this point, he senses something is off, but he didn't have any sufficient evidence for an arrest. All he had are these stories that everybody was seen together, you know, a bunch of circumstantial evidence that puts the women with Pierce that evening, but nothing to say he drugged them or killed them or did anything else, you know? So Pierce is feeling pretty cocky at this point. He was smiling to detectives as he bids them adieu. He's like, thank you, gentlemen, but have a good day. So
gross.
And Vanderlee knows he needs more proof if he wants a murder charge to stick. So he reaches out to his colleague, Detective Yu. And the first thing Detective Yu asks is, who do you sexually assault this time? So you had previously investigated Pierce in 2020 for the sexual assault of a 19-year-old girl who had been raped while unconscious. And I'm not going to lie, this makes me furious because it means this piece of shit had kind of been on their radar before. And he's just walking the streets, partying and drugging women at will.
And the way the detective casually says, who did he sexually assault this time? Fuck you, detective. Where's the compassion for the 19-year-old girl? She was drugged and raped while hanging out with this guy, and that's your response?
Yeah.
That's disgusting. Yet again, the system is broken and has let everyone down.
Here's it under a magnifying glass. Here it is, people. This is what happened. So the cops were completely aware of his past offenses, including an additional rape from 2014, which I didn't even list.
So why wasn't he charged? I don't understand this.
I don't know, but where you're going to get even angrier when I tell you that Christy and Hilda both showed signs of sexual assault when their rape kits were performed, but police knew they were having trouble building a case since there was also a presence of recreational drugs in their systems. That's where things get hairy as far as motive and what was consensual, what was not, what did they do on their own, you know?
I'm sorry, are you saying that LAPD is being shitty to victims and letting bad guys slip through the cracks?
It's just so frustrating and disgusting. Well, it's safe to say police were under an enormous amount of pressure to uncover as much possible evidence as they could against Pierce. So they keep tabs on him, and they learn that the very same day the police stopped by his house, moving trucks were spotted outside the building, and Pierce and Osborne were on the move. So what can police do? They don't have enough for a murder charge, but they do have enough to get a warrant for suspicion of manslaughter in the deaths of Christy and Hilda. So on November 15th, and we're talking 2 days after the girls were taken to the hospital, David Pierce is arrested, and alongside him, two other men were also apprehended, both linked to the entertainment industry. 47-year-old Michael Ansbach, who was a cinematographer known for his work on Vanderpump Rules and The Amazing Race, and 42-year-old Bran Osborne, that actor who he lived with, who appeared in Nurse Jackie and NCIS, believe it or not.
A crime show. That's awesome.
Right?
Wow.
Well, you'll be happy to hear that he was arrested on set.
Do you think he was confused? Like, I don't remember this part in the script.
Yeah, seriously, right? Well, they were believed to have assisted Pierce in covering up his crimes. So all of these guys are interviewed separately, but let's focus on David Pierce because he made a super sketchy remark expressing that he had hoped that Michael wasn't telling the police about them giving the girls wine and drugs.
Like, you just did, idiot. Like, what?
Well, he also made a really troubling comment about a bad batch of fentanyl that had been circulating, which obviously raised some eyebrows because that detail hadn't been made public. So as detectives dig deeper into this, Pierce's charges began to expand. And while the public was kind of fixated on the high profile deaths, police behind the scenes were quietly adding multiple sex assault charges from the unrelated incidents, allegations from at least seven other young women spanning 10 years.
Oh.
And these included serious offenses like rape and sexual battery. And why did this happen? You know, authorities looked into Pierce's potential role in the deaths of Christy and Hilda. More women stepped forward, sharing strikingly similar experiences. And they spoke of being invited to his apartment, drugs they couldn't remember taking, memory lapses, and just the feeling of just fear and shame. It's just sick.
Yeah.
So when police, they searched Pierce's apartment, they reportedly discovered drugs, including heroin and other substances. But surveillance, phone records, and statements from his acquaintances helped piece together a timeline that placed Christy and Hilda in Pierce's apartment that night. Theory? That both women were drugged, likely without their knowledge, inside his home. And when things went fatally wrong, instead of calling for help, the men dumped their bodies and vanished.
These men are clearly dumber than dumb. Like, what the hell do you think is going to happen when you start mixing fentanyl in with your shit?
So, according to court testimony, Pierce and Michael Ansbach brought Christy and Hilda back to the apartment. And Ansbach told the court that Pierce basically pressured them to do cocaine. And he allegedly served the girls wine and handed Ansbach some as well. Ansbach said the wine had a foul taste to it. And after drinking the wine, he began to feel dizzy and became violently ill after passing out. Jesus. And Christy and Hilda also passed out, according to Ansbach, but they never woke up. And he claimed to have begged Pierce to call the police, but Pierce refused. And he said, "Dead girls don't talk."
Oh, I want to punch him in his stupid face.
So after Ansbach left, Pierce and his roommate, Bran Osborne, who's being charged as an accessory, allegedly shoved the women's lifeless bodies into his car, drove them to two different hospitals, and dumped them on the curbs before driving away. And prosecutors told the juror that the fentanyl was fatal and that Pierce knew his cocaine had been laced with it. And taking the stand against the advice of his attorneys, Pierce testified that he put women in a guest bedroom before going to sleep in his own room. So, I don't know. I put him to bed. I don't know what happened.
Not my fault.
Well, when the women had been unconscious for about 12 hours, Pierce claimed that he administered CPR, but then drove them to the hospital because he thought it would be faster than calling an ambulance, according to the New York Post. So in addition to two murder counts, Pierce was charged with sexually assaulting seven victims over a 13-year period. Wow. But it's believed that more than 100 women were victims of his, and investigators are still to this day uncovering more people that this guy was attached to. So initially, Pierce's bail was set at over $1 million, but as more women came forward with stories of sexual assault, the pressure built. And by July of 2022, he was officially charged with murder in the deaths of both Christy Giles and Hilda Marcella Cabrales Arzola. And the district attorney's case leaned heavily on the evidence of a pattern, suggesting that the predatory behavior was spanning years, which is true. And Pierce pleaded not guilty, obviously.
Of course.
I don't know what you're talking about. And his attorneys have denied the allegations and claimed the deaths were accidental overdoses, not murder. But the public saw something very different. And this was a man with a long trail of red flags, women who never met each other, but told similar stories. And that, to me, is a sign that there's some truth behind it. When people come out of the woodwork, I know they usually wait for the initial, someone has to come out and then others do, like they finally feel comfortable. But when these women don't know each other, when they have no attachment to each other, that's when I feel like there's some truth behind it.
100%.
Yeah. Brant Osborne was also charged with two counts of accessory to murder after the fact on October 25th, 2022. And Michael Ansbach is only a witness despite being arrested in connection with the murders. And Ansbach's attorney stated that he was at the party hired by Pierce to do a job, and he was not in the Prius or any other vehicle implicated by police. And Melissa, what are your thoughts on, do you think he played a role or was he a victim as well? Because he says he allegedly passed out after drinking the wine, too.
I don't know. I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but like, you're often guilty by association, like whether or not you're a part of it. But if these are the people that he's making the conscious choice to hang out with, I don't know that it's wrong to speculate that maybe some of Pierce's slimy, gross shadiness rubbed off on Michael. I'm not saying he was a part of it, but I don't think it's too far of a reach to say he possibly was.
There's a bigger lesson here. And like, if you're 7 years old or 70 years old, careful who you hang out with. I mean, this guilt by association thing, it's like your friends, who you hang out with, you get lumped into that. So like, if you could be a great kid and your friends are doing bad stuff, you're in that friend group. So now you're labeled a bad kid too. So that applies when you're a toddler, when you're a Hollywood producer. On February 4th, 2025, David Pierce was convicted of first-degree murder in fentanyl drugging of Christy Giles and Hilda Marcella Cabrales Arzola, and three counts of forcible rape, one count of sexual penetration by use of force, one count of sodomy by use of force, one count of rape of an unconscious woman, and one count of sexual penetration by a foreign object in the sexual assault of seven different women.
Wow. And that just happened earlier this year. I didn't realize it was like that recent.
Very recent.
Wow.
So the case against Osborne was declared a mistrial after the jurors were deadlocked, which is unbelievable to me. I don't understand how you can deadlock when you have CCTV footage of all three men trying to disguise themselves and do what they did. Because if they were doing the right thing, no person who is guilty would try to conceal their identities by wearing a mask.
I guarantee you there was like some like douchey dude on that jury who was all about like the fragile masculinity. And he's like, oh, you think I was just trying to have a good time?
Maybe could very well be. But so he got off the hook. Well, in the weeks that followed, the entire community came together to celebrate the lives of these two women. Vigils were held and hundreds of people showed up for memorials in Los Angeles and Alabama, where Christy was from, and in Hilda's hometown in Mexico. Balloons were released, candles were lit, tears were shed, stories shared. I mean, they were wonderful events. Or given the situation, I mean, that's all you can do is come together to celebrate these lives.
Right.
You know, but it's still so incredibly sad. And Christy's memorial in her hometown included a beachside tribute with flowers and floating lanterns. And it was kind of a nod to her free spirit and her love of the ocean. And her husband, Jan, described her as the light of my life. And that light was reflected in every person who came out to honor her that day.
I watched an interview with him at one point, it was years ago, and he seemed so genuinely like head over heels in love with Christy.
Well, the fact that they would share their location too when they were apart, you knew they cared about each other. You knew they cared about staying safe. These were, I mean, they were only married 2 years, but I mean, they were soulmates.
Yeah.
Hilda's family made the generous decision to donate her organs to 9 individuals per her wishes if something ever happened to her. And in Mexico, her friends came together to celebrate her life in her beloved park. And they dressed all in white, they lit candles and had the floating lanterns, and they enjoyed her favorite music and shared her favorite cake. And Hilda is survived by her parents, her step-parents, her 3 siblings. Her dog, Thomas, is now being cared for by one of her oldest friends.
Oh, Thomas.
So the aftermath was marked by both sorrow, but a sense of purpose as well. So Jan and the people who are closest to these women channeled their grief and turned it into a quest for justice. They shined a light on similar cases and advocate for greater awareness of safety within the nightlife environment, as well as genuine threats posed by drug-facilitating crimes. Their legacy has sparked meaningful change, though, igniting discussions around consent and safety and accountability. And they have not only confronted the justice system, but have also taken on the prevailing culture, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So that, for what it is, that wasn't, like I said, much of a whodunit. Like, we got to these guys pretty quick, but man, what a quick acting. Jan is a hero in this. I think he's he's our MU MVP this week, but also the internet sleuths for helping him kind of tie this guy within hours. I mean, David Pierce was on the radar within hours, and that was thanks to just people who knew this address had a bad history.
And you know what? Like, I love when the internet gets together to do something good.
Right. Me too.
And we're not doing this, so I don't feel bad spoiling it, but we considered doing a theme on crime solved by the internet.
Yeah.
So we still might. One day down the road. But I just love reading about that one. Like, they all work together for good instead of like evil and canceling people and trolling.
Yeah, exactly. And, exactly. The internet is such a shitty place that it's like nice to see that some humanity exists. Well, that is the horrifically sad case of 24-year-old Christy Giles and 26-year-old Hilda Marcellus Cabrales Arzola.
Oh, 24 and 26. These girls were babies.
They were.
24 and 26. Jesus, that is wild. Like,
and so vibrant, just full of life.
Yes.
And I don't know. The lesson here is definitely like, watch yourself every time you go out. Just keep an eye on who you're around, who's serving you things. Like, just get your own drinks. Don't accept things from people. And just watch your back and have friends with you.
As the girls on People Are the Worst to say, people are the worst.
People are just the worst. It's freaking true.
Well, Ed, thank you for sharing this case with us. And listen up, crime crew. We want to thank you guys for listening. We really, really appreciate your support.
We definitely do. You guys drive us. So catch us next week, and we'll be interviewing a wonderful friend of the show, Shannon Byers, who is a former death investigator for Gwinnett County in Georgia. And now that we're closer to the episode, I can kind of reveal a little more about what we're doing. So Shannon reached out to us back in March when we were petitioning for story ideas, and she came to us with the idea of discussing first responder trauma. And these are the people who arrive at crime scenes and deal with the unthinkable, like be it police, firefighters, EMTs, or people like Shannon. And we're going to get into the effects of working these scenes day in and day out and what it can do to a person's psyche and how it influences their career and how it impacts their family life and their personal life. So it's going to be an incredibly unique perspective, I think, that you won't want to miss. It's something very different. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be notified the second it drops. And we'd love to hear your thoughts, theories, opinions. Feel free to reach out to us on socials or through our website. Melissa, can you tell people where they can find us?
I will, but I also want to let you know, Ed, that Shannon and I will be swooning over Ken Brennan. So you need to be prepared for some Ken love, because she loves him just as much as I do.
I may have COVID during that episode.
Okay, we don't want you. You know what? We'll put Dawn on. We don't need you.
Dawn.
We'll have Dawn. Me, Dawn, and Shannon can talk about how amazing Ken is and how lame you are.
We'll talk about Ken's pecs.
Oh, Ken, stop it. All right. Can't get all hot and bothered right now, guys. Well, there are a few ways you can reach out to us. You can reach out to us on our socials, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, at Murder Unscripted. You can email us at murderunscriptedpod@gmail.com, or you can always shoot us a line through our website, www.murderunscriptedpod.com.
Absolutely, you can. Well, thank you, Crime Crew, as always, for joining us. Your support literally means everything to us. We're so thankful to have you with us on this journey. You guys are amazing.
That you are. And until next week, stay safe, be kind, and remember, perverts don't wear signs that say they're perverts.